This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's 320 nautical miles, about 650 kilometres from Johannesburg to Tuvalu Airport. And we've been flying now for just over an hour. And where we are now, it's much emptier, more desert. It's just this haze sitting across the land. But you can definitely feel that you're coming up to the boundaries of the Kalahari and an entirely different experience.
The extraordinary things about lions is you hear from time to time that they're endangered, you know, there's a worry about them. But the fact is, you put lions in an environment where they are happy and they breed like rabbits.
Oh, here's an ostrich running across the road.
Two of them.
What a the speed they're doing.
Oh my
look,
God.
Look at that.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, what we're doing, before I came, we've just been overtaken by two ostrich.
You don't hear that very often, it's the sound of a snoring cheetah.
Tuvalu will be on your left, and if we're lucky enough to see any game, we'll give you a shout.
And trust me, I was keeping my eyes peeled too. I'm Mark Stephen. Thanks very much for downloading the Scotland Outdoors podcast. As you might know, recently we've been looking at Scottish sporting estates, what they do, how they function, the impact they have on how the countryside looks. A few years ago, I was lucky enough to visit South Africa to cover a pretty remarkable story. Andy Malcolm, a gamekeeper from Invermark Estate in the Angus Glens, swapped jobs with Dylan Smith, the assistant manager at a huge private game reserve called Svalu on the fringes of the Kalahari. Now, I want to revisit these recordings with you, not just because it was great fun, which it was, but because I think that what I saw in South Africa can help illuminate some of the things we do here in Scotland. So, let's begin with a man who actually owns Svalu.
My name's Nicky Oppenheimer. I'm a South African, but I'm lucky to live my life between South Africa and England. I've always been in love with wilderness, and you may think wilderness just happens in Africa, but that's not the case. And we've been extraordinarily lucky for the last 25 years or so to go every year up to Scotland, to Invermark, which is true wilderness. And so that's the sort of Scottish end, and in Africa, we were privileged to come to own a huge swathe of wilderness in the Northern Cape called Svalu, which means a new beginning. And we conceived the idea of having a swap between a gamekeeper in Scotland and his equivalent game ranger in South Africa so that they could see how the other half lived. You had to get somebody who would have a change in environment and be able to handle that change in environment. And in Dylan Smith from Svalu and Andy Malcolm from Invermark, that was the easiest part of the whole thing.
Nicky Oppenheimer comes up as a shooting guest, grouse shooting at Invermark, and has done for a lot of years. And unbeknownst to us, he'd got chatting with our laird afterwards and had offered this exchange. The first I knew about it was September time, and me and my colleagues were just hanging about waiting for the day to start to go over to the lodge to get our guests for stag stalking. And my head keeper Fred comes wandering at the house and says, "Listen, fellas." And he basically outlined this offer of not just the individuals, but families exchanging places. And the words were no sooner out of his mouth than I was leaping up and down with my arm in the shine. Me, 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 me. When I was 10, say, if you had asked me, you know, sort of, what would you most like to be in the whole world? You know, I would have said, you know, a game ranger in Africa, or a fur trapper in Canada, or a skipper of a big game fishing boat, something like that. It would have been there. It would have been mentioned.
This is known as the Lakaba section. It's an area that we have large predators in, like lions, wild dogs, spotted hyena, which we don't have on the other side of the reserve. Predators have got absolutely no human interference here. They live, breed, die by themselves, and they, you know, they catch all their own food. But that's the kind of thing that we're going to be involved with in the next couple of days, is actually catching some lions, which will be very, very exciting, and I think it's going to be good fun to get involved with.
What was that web post?
That was a gemsbok. What we know as a gemsbok, many people call it an oryx. And also one of our favourite food items of lions, incidentally, yeah.
My name is Gus van Dyk, and I'm the general manager of Tswalu Kalahari. What we're trying to do here is re-establish the ecosystem and all the facets of the ecosystem that cause the Kalahari to be what it is. So as long as animals are living and dying naturally, as long as antelope are eating vegetation and lions are eating the antelope, as long as insect diversity can flourish and boom and bust in ways which is very typical to the Kalahari, then we're achieving our objective. What we need to do is make sure that all the components of the ecosystem have the opportunity to establish and flourish and evolve in the ways that they have over the millennia.
What characterizes the Kalahari?
I think the silence is probably characteristic of the Kalahari. You know, it's about just long periods of absolute silence, skylines that are uninterrupted, night skies that are just incredible because there is no light pollution. So I guess it's one of the last, I think it's one of the last great wildernesses. It's a vast area, and it's a privilege to live out here, and it's really all those features that, and so many of the facets of the Kalahari are difficult to put into words, and I think maybe that is exactly what characterizes it. It's something quite spiritual, I think.
So those are the four main characters in this program: Scottish gamekeeper Andy Malcolm, ranger Dylan Smith, manager Gus van Dyk, and owner Nicky Oppenheimer. No sooner had Andy and I landed at Tswalu than we found ourselves heading out in a pickup truck with Dylan to help capture and translocate some Hartmann's mountain zebra. To be honest, for me, it was like suddenly finding myself in an episode of Daktari.
The area that we're passing through, or which encompasses most of Swalu, is known as arid savanna. Then the hills that we're going through are known as mountain bushveld. Now, bushveld is really a colloquial term referring to any area where you get a high density of shrubs and bushes as opposed to grassland. And as if people would be able to see this, I'd sort of describe this as an open woodland interspersed with large patches of grass, and then obviously your shrub or bush covered hills.
Your immediate impression is that the flat lands is almost like the sea, and you have these mountains, these hills sticking out like islands out of a sea, and they're obviously two completely different terrains. Well, the track we're driving on at the moment is brick red. I mean, and it's a very fine sand. Where does that sand come from?
Well, Mark, it's a brilliant question. Now, there are a lot of geologists have tried to answer this over the time that it's been worked on and done research having been done on it. And it's there is a bit of debate as to where it comes from. A lot of people say it's seabed deposits.
Uh-huh.
we know for a fact these are what we call aeolian. They're wind-blown sands. Uh-huh. So these sands have been pushed in. The general consensus is from further north. The time frame, some people say as recently as 20,000 years, which, you know, on a geological time scale, that's absolutely nothing. What the sand hides is quite interesting as well. You know, you always hear these stories about the lost city of the Kalahari. And one of the theories is, well, yeah, underneath the sand, there lies many things to be discovered, treasures and gold and diamonds and lost cities and whatnot. But, you know, I think it's a lot of
I thought gold and diamonds was the norm around a bit here.
yeah. That's why we work here.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but look at that. We just crested over the hill there. What a fantastic view.
I'm speechless. It's awesome to be here. We're looking out over this massive plain in between the mountains. It's just covered in this long green grass, or many long green grasses, lots of thorn bush, and the fact that you know in amongst this that there's, you know, sort of 24 different species of big mammals. There's things out there that would happily eat you. It's just awesome.
That is the big difference between here and Scotland, isn't it? The stuff here that will cheerfully kill you.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, and there's many other things that will accidentally kill you. I've never been in an environment like this before. You know, when you first get here, it feels really threatening. There's nothing doesn't seem to have fangs or thorns
or venom.
Yeah, there's stuff that will charge you or bite you or eat you or sting you. But the more you're out here, you realise that there isn't really a threat behind every bush. And once you start getting past the fear, what's left with me, it's just awe.
Yeah. There's more antelope across there, and there's a couple of vehicles straight across there.
That's where we're headed.
There's something moving quite fast across the plain just above that. Is that another vehicle? Just seeing the top of it.
A helicopter.
Helicopter. Huh? That's what it is.
There's more zebra over there.
These are Birchall zebra. So we're not catching these Birchall zebra. We're looking for Hartmann's mountain zebra. And that's why you need the helicopter to try bring them down off the hills. It's a flat ground where you can actually dart them without injuring the animals.
See, the helicopter is hovering stationary now, or now on stationary.
What's wrong, Richard? What's
down
wrong?
Or down nearly.
The zebra on the main road. We tried to follow the gate, and it's not scared of vehicle. Just passes the vehicle like that.
I think just leave it for the moment. Yeah, as long as there shouldn't be a lot of traffic on that road at the moment, but I'll give it the benefit of the doubt for the moment. How's that? Hey, Charlotte, like a good
thing. Anybody call away at Transtral? I don't know from Transtral which direction.
There's a zebra on the main road, eh? One's got out, they can't get it back in, so I said they must don't shoot it, just leave it for the moment. Have a look when you get there.
Okay.
Okay.
There's got three more down there.
Super, thanks, guys. So we've got a good breeding population here, and they are exposed to the normal risks that any of these other animals run off predation. But, you know, as you know, we acquired a new area a couple of years ago that's got no zebra or very little game on it at the moment. So we just thought, well, we've got an entire capture team out here. Let's try to take a couple of these zebra off, you know, reduce the numbers, relocate them from the area where they are getting preyed upon, and put them in the area that where there are no zebra currently, which is great. You know, so it's a win-win situation. The zebra, okay.
Is that them going up the hill there?
Look at that. What a sight.
Yeah. If you went up there, Mark, you'd realise just how rough that terrain is.
Look at all the bottom there as well. Look at.
Yeah.
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 There's about four up towards that little call there. But I mean, there's what about probably half a dozen. I can hear the helicopter now too.
That again, it looks like a fall. I presume
the
mother's down close by.
Yeah, the chopper's stopped. And the spotter is leaning out, pointing. Oh, there's another fall. This helicopter's about 30, 40 feet above the ground. And he's just pursuing the fall in an attempt to get it, and they have to get it. These are herd animals, they have to go together. Here we go. Whoops, it is it.
Are you doing like
that? He's going to reverse back into position. Hang on.
Okay, Sian. Okay.
And this is a mare lying on its side. What a gorgeous creature. I've never picked up a horse before.
Okay, one,
two,
three. Come on, let's go.
Okay, let me get up.
Right, keep going. One, two, three. One, two, three.
There we go.
Oh,
sorry.
That's all right.
There's the dart.
Yeah.
Right into his backside.
Yeah. Best place for him.
Yeah. We're now changed directions and we're chasing a truck full of guys and zebra.
Yeah, a couple of darted zebra in the back. And the idea is we want to get them back to the boma and get them out from under the anaesthetic as quick as possible. It's better for the animals, but it also means we've got to get ourselves back out here and pick up more animals. So, you know, it's Warp Factor 6 heading for the boma.
They don't hang about once they've actually got these zebra. They don't want them tranquilised for a minute longer than they have to be. So we're hammering along this road, dirt track. Probably doing about 35, 40 miles an hour. Doesn't sound like much, but you're getting sandblasted all the way. Dylan's on the truck in front, and Andy's the one immediately behind me.
Just pulling this out of the back of the truck. Let's give him a hand. This is a big animal.
They're just going to offload him. They're going to wake him up, keep him in the boma until he's awake, and then one of the guys will open the curtain.
Mm-hmm. So they've had him on a sort of canvas stretcher, and they've just removed that.
Exactly. And Tina's going to give him the antidote.
Yeah.
Just wake him up.
How long does that take to work?
Tina,
how long?
About 30 seconds.
So once you've done that, we run?
Immediately, yes, please.
No, I don't need to be told twice.
No, it's not that dangerous, eh?
What is that, fighting?
He's finished fighting. All the other side, look at this. It's an old stallion.
All these bite marks?
Yes.
As evidence of ex-fight?
Yeah, it's stallions sorting out their territory and their herds.
This is just closing the boma across.
They've got a webbing strap that they've got around the legs, which they're going to untie, and that's when things will get serious.
Everybody's running out. See if I can find a hole in this fence to watch what's going on. Got one. Fairly soon they should start to wake up. You can see them start to move now. These are wild animals just watching through this tiny little hole in the plastic sheeting. Yep, that's the fall up. Oh, there's another one. Yep. Yeah. We've got a yearling who's a runner. Oops, dear me. They're running about, they're actually charging the fencing. So, once they're all up and about, I mean, that's incredible. And once they're all up and about and on their feet and look reasonably steady and happy, they'll open up the exit on the back. That's just one mare to come up. Come on. Up you come. There we go, come on, that's her. Once Tina and Charlotte are convinced that they're steady, they're on the way. Oh, there's one run into the nylon sheeting the other side again. Right, they're going to open the gates at the far end. Just shaking the sheeting has spooked them away from it. That's the gate open at the back. Any second now, one of them will spot it. And once one goes, they'll all go. There. Come on, out of there. These are truly beautiful animals. The thing is, they're not really black and white. It's almost a bluey-black and a fawn colour. Huge ears. These incredible crests. And the strike, there you go. Come on, out that way. Go on. That's them gone. Ah, good job.
What do you think, Mark?
Oh, brilliant. Isn't it? To see them all up and around like that in such an enclosed space. You know, yeah. And then open the barricades at the back, and it took them a fair while to figure it out, just to spot the gap.
Yeah.
You know, but once one had cracked it, that was it, they were all away.
The thing is, when they try and drive them into bomas, they're one of the most difficult animals to get into the bomas, because they're smart. You know, they size it up and they think, and it'd be exactly the same thing here. You know, they'd be cautious about going through that narrow opening, but they're smart cookies. Yeah.
They sound a bit different than the plain zebra.
Yeah, do they?
Yeah.
They're going away remarkably calmly now. I mean, they're only they're still sort of 150 yards off, just picking their way along the face through the rocks, all looking pretty happy. There was a couple got a kick in the procedures there, but they seem to be all right.
I was going to say, we wouldn't say the same about us if we got a kick from them.
The sheer scale of that operation at Svalu was remarkable. The fleet of pickup trucks, the small army of helpers, the helicopter. But as the owner of Svalu, Nicky Oppenheimer, told me, it's all been done with one specific goal in mind.
You have a huge swathe of the Northern Cape in the Kalahari. It has a fence around it, so it has to be managed. But you are trying to turn it, as we say down at Svalu, restoring the Kalahari to itself. And if you look at it now, you're seeing what the potential of the Kalahari without man's footprint on it. Man is there, but as Strill, my wife, says about her gardens, she says you garden with the fingertips, not with the fist. And I think at Svalu, the human input is the fingertips.
As a Scot, I'm looking at the contrast. In Invermark, most management is done with the gun. You know, it's done by killing things. Not the case in Svalu at all.
Well, I think it's a wonderful contrast, and you're absolutely right. If you read Andy's blog, his daily task is getting out there, knocking things over to make certain that other things, particularly, say, the red grouse and the deer, survive. And we don't do that in Svalu. But what we have to do is have a major capture operation every year to preserve the biodiversity, the biomass on the ground, to match it to the amount of grasses available for them to eat. And so we do that. What I find disturbing, and I'm not sure what one can do about it, is we sell a lot of live animals. You may think that's great, but there's no doubt that a proportion of them go to other farmers where somebody comes very shortly thereafter and shoots them. And that's gives me a concern. I don't know the answer. So in a sense, while we do it differently to Scotland, we're not completely different.
In Scotland, animals like red deer need to be culled to reduce overall numbers for the greater health of the herd. Mostly that culling's done by people like Andy, lone stalkers on foot out on the hill. Physically, it's very hard work, and it takes a long time. When we got back to Dylan's that night, I asked them, look, given what we've just seen with the zebra, might there not be a more efficient way of doing the job in Scotland?
Yeah, but there are issues here. I mean, first and foremost, to chase wild animals with a vehicle is illegal. But secondly, if you could do it, it just wouldn't be financially viable. The animals that you're dealing with out in South Africa have got far, far higher value, especially when you're darting them and selling them again live. An average hind carcass is worth maybe 50 quid to the estate. Your average helicopter, I imagine, is going to be costing you something like 500 quid an hour. Mm-hmm. And it's just pure economics apart from anything else. And I would also like to add that there isn't a stalker in the land who wouldn't sort of be horrified at the idea of chasing these animals with a helicopter or shooting them from vehicles. Or another thing you can do is be capturing them in enclosures. You know, basically, you feed them into these enclosures and sneak up and close the gate on them. And then it's a slaughter that goes on in these catchers. And it goes against our whole raison d'etre.
Yeah.
I think it was the deer commission were called into an estate and they used a helicopter to remove the deer and basically to prevent them coming out the end of a glen there. Now, I can remember, rage isn't too strong a word, fury. You know, keepers gathered, you know, at the scene of that. This was a compulsory culling going on. But the use of the helicopter, the fact that it was different methods being used. I remember talking to grown men, hard grown men, and they were in tears. It was tears of rage, and they just thought this was completely wrong.
Yeah, and you know, I would agree with them. However, there was an argument there that they were using the helicopter purely for dropping the men off on the ground and extracting the carcasses. Now, I've actually seen this myself, and it just goes against the grain to see a helicopter taken off through the skies with these lifeless carcasses swinging underneath it. However, the deer are dead. I mean, what does it matter to the deer how they come off the hill? I mean, I'm used to seeing the deer getting extracted with a pony, and it's great and it's traditional. But I think the important thing is that, you know, sort of if you've got to cull deer like that, you've got to do it with as much sympathy to the living animals as you can.
Going back to the economics, Dylan, I mean, how valuable are the animals in Swallow? Give me some examples.
You're looking at sable antelope that are valued at going on to 400,000 rand now. Well, that's 40,000 pounds, you know, per head. So, and he's spot on with his prices with helicopters, that, you know, 500 quid for a helicopter for an hour, that's about what we'd be paying in South Africa for a small helicopter as well for capture. But when you're dealing with animals that are that expensive, absolutely, that's a no-brainer from an economics point of view. We do, in fact, we sit with the same problem with certain species, like things like warthogs, which is a kind of pig. I mean, they cost way less than red deer, and they go in these very, very small family groups, like 3, 4, 5 at most. And the problem there is a lot of these capture operators make a point of avoiding catching warthogs exactly for the reasons that Andy's just explained, that to get a whole team out to try catch them, these small groups, and especially using a helicopter, the guys would rather come up with every other excuse or actually just approach us before and say, well, can we leave the warthogs off the tender because it's just not economically viable. So, I mean, the point that Andy made there is 100%. You know, I think a lot of people like to think, well, yeah, you know, instead of having a long culling season with guys walking around the hills day in and day out, yep, get a helicopter and get your cull done in a couple of weeks and or a week or 2 weeks or whatever and get it over with. But economically, yeah, it's not just the traditional thing, which I feel very strongly about as well, but it's also the economics. You know, these places don't run on big budgets.
No.
You know, and if you get a helicopter in, you can just sink the operation very quickly. So it sounds nice on paper in some aspects, but the traditional side, I think, is something very important to uphold and maintain. And like, yeah, Andy says,
I'd also like to add that, you know, sort of when you're stalking your deer traditionally, you're giving yourself so much more time to look through your herd. You know, when I get into a group of hinds, you know, always my first priority is looking for something old or sick
or a calf that's been born really late and, you know, something that's unlikely to survive the winter anyway. And to be taking these deer out, that's your first priority. Mm. And that's making the rest of the herd stronger. Mm. And, you know, you wouldn't be doing that if you're doing just a mass call from a helicopter.
Absolutely. Yeah.
This is the Scotland Outdoors Podcast. I'm Mark Stephen. In South Africa, live animals are a tradable commodity, with different species having different monetary values. Now, this whole economy is only possible because of the skill and expertise of game capture companies, specialists in tranquilizing, capturing, storing, and transporting wild animals.
I particularly like the game capture operators. They seem to me the horse traders of the modern world. They capture animals they haven't sold to anybody. They sell people animals they haven't captured. And they spend as much time on their cell phone, thank goodness for cell phones, in wheeling and dealing and trading and balancing. And they're real proper operators.
They need to have places where they can store animals that they might catch ahead of them being moved to a new place. So we're happy to have those animals running around on our place, but once we've come to an agreement, then we expect them to come off in a sequence as well. So we're putting her under pressure. So the hard work is for her to go and find the market and find that there's a place that she doesn't have animals sitting on a truck, because if they're sitting on a truck and they haven't got a home, that's going to cause all kinds of problems.
A zebra, a Hartmann zebra, is probably worth 15,000 rand. If you think about it, we flew half an hour. It's 2,000 rand. Yeah. Put a dart in, it's 1,000 rand. The labour, the petrol, the diesel, everything, the help. Maybe the total came to 5,000 rand. It's a 15,000 rand animal. 10,000 rand is enough.
Wildlife vet Charlotte Mouet. More from her shortly. Of all the animals in Africa, Cape buffalo are widely regarded as being amongst the most dangerous. They're huge, they're really aggressive, and more or less totally unpredictable. So, early one morning, Andy, Dylan and I set off to visit some.
What exactly are we darting the buffalo for?
It's going to be doing TB tests, bovine tuberculosis. Our buffalo have been declared TB-free, and so obviously because of that you get much higher prices for them, but before a purchaser will take them, they'll redo a test, just in case.
It's nice to have it here. We're not the only country in the world that's paranoid about TV.
How you guys?
Morning, Gus. How are you this morning?
Good. You bring the coffee up?
Have a good.
You want to bring them this side, Charlotte, or we need to take the people away?
The Puma is like a roofless building. There's lots of rooms, and Charlotte, the French vet, is trying to get four animals on one side, two animals on the other, and then she's going to dart them.
As soon as they've pushed that gate closed, that'll have split the animals into a smaller, more manageable group. The thing you don't want them to happen is for those, particularly the bulls, to get upset or uncomfortable, and then they start just swinging their horns around, and then they can hurt those cows, and that's a situation you don't want.
And what's the ladder for?
They're going to dart over the top of the bonus.
Knock them out completely.
Yeah, I know you have to. These buffaloes, you don't mess with a buffalo. You don't go and try and handle him.
Yeah. Well, what does a buffalo weigh?
Those big bulls will be about 800 kilos.
Yeah, you can start seeing them through the gaps. Yeah.
They're huge. You must remember they were caught only 3 days ago. Well, not even 3 days ago. They're being tested now for various diseases. Their immunity's been challenged, and then they'll measure the response today. There's the first dart in. How long does it take for the tranquilizer to work?
I'm not sure. Tina, how long will it take for it to work?
6 minutes.
6 minutes.
Yeah. 6 minutes. And you calculate dosage on weight and whether they've eaten or not?
No, per species.
Per species. Okay. These are wild animals, but they're already tagged. Who did that?
We tag them as capture them in the field for identification.
Yeah.
The darts look like very small hypodermics. red ends. That's the fourth one dotted. She's not messing about. That's five dotted already. Although we're standing on the other side of this bull fence, you can smell these animals.
When they go down, you need to keep the heads up because they put their noses down into the sand. They can't breathe. So you're always worried about if you've got enough manpower to do that because the heads are very heavy. But we seem to have enough guys. That's why Tina's made the decision. Rather just do them all at once. We've got enough guys to hold them.
These animals are just circling round. They're trying to get into the corner. There's one trying to get through the gate.
Very aggressive.
Yeah, very aggressive animal. And they're just working up a dust storm with red dust. That's the sixth one darted. So now we wait.
Is there a gate to go in there?
No. You can go up the ramp.
Okay.
This is brilliant. I like this.
It's tense stuff though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I thought it was perfectly safe standing right outside.
No.
I don't think they could come through the walls. It's, that's a certain something, doesn't it?
We had a bull in there a while back. We sold him, but he was pulling those poles off. He'd just hook his head in. Just not the big ones, but the smaller ones. But
it's enough to get your attention.
Yeah. It was a 12 mil thread ball that he was snapping. Just like, you think, all right.
Okay. Yeah.
Don't want to be caught in there with him. Because they will. I mean, if you do get caught in there, they'll kill you.
That's them down now. And now that we're in next to them and up close, you can see just what sort of size they are.
Yeah. It's that boss of horn on the top. Because, you know, it's not like our cattle. Our cattle have got horns growing at either side of the head, essentially. This is just solid right across the top.
That boss has been the undoing of many a hunter. If you're trying to shoot a bull coming at you and your bullet hits that, it just doesn't penetrate.
No.
And that's quite often the last thing that these people see.
Yeah. These animals are having their heads held up. There's a guy now, the horn, and somebody else holding the nose up, just keeping the noses out of the dirt to be sure that these animals can breathe properly.
The size of the bull compared with these young cows is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just look at them. Look at the sort of the bulge of muscles underneath that hide.
Yeah.
Amazingly powerful animals. I imagine getting charged by one of these would just be like getting hit by a truck. But the truck would just keep coming back at you until there's nothing left.
A truck with sharp points.
Yeah. Charlotte, you seem to be running through a whole panoply of drugs here. What all are you treating them with?
We've got vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
Because it all, for here, they're fine, but it all depends where they're going to be going. And they're still going to be sitting in the bomber for another probably 3 weeks. So we're giving them some vitamins, some antibiotics, some long-acting tranquilizer, some deworming. So we're doing the full treatment to cover a large spectrum.
Gus, I take it you're not doing this as a beauty parade. What are you doing it for?
I'm photographing each animal just as a reference. It's something we can send out to prospective buyers. They can have a look at the age of the animal from the teeth photos I'm taking, and they can have a look at what they're buying. Yeah, we're quite far, we're quite remote, and people who are interested in starting it. This is a fantastic breeding herd of buffalo. Yeah, two bulls, four cows, lovely to re-establish on a new reserve, but they're quite valuable animals, so people who are going to invest in animals like us want to know what they're buying. This way they can get some email pictures, have a look, and have confidence that they're getting the right animal.
What would these animals be worth?
Probably £20,000, I would think, each.
Each?
Each, yeah. See, what makes them so valuable is that buffalo in Africa have got all sorts of diseases that infect cattle, and so the state veterinary services limit the the way or the way those buffaloes can be moved around the country. These buffaloes don't have any of those diseases, and that's what they're testing for now. And that makes them very valuable from a conservation point of view, because we can move them around the country into new areas, and from an economic point of view, because farmers who are re-establishing populations are prepared to buy disease-free animals because they're the only animals they are allowed to move.
Get over how labor intensive this is. I mean, I know how difficult TB testing is in a domestic circumstance. You must have four or five times the number of people you would find for this exercise in Scotland.
Yeah, you need to have at least two people per animal holding the head up, making sure it's not regurgitating or twisting its neck around. So just the value of the animal justifies as well, but also the well-being of the staff as well. You don't want to have someone trapped in a bioma like this with a half-drugged buffalo, so you have more people, the better. Come in quickly, get it done. The vet's just doing a rectal there to check for pregnancy as well. That's the last of the tests that will define the value of the animal.
Yeah. Every day an adventure for Charlotte.
This is really unusual in terms of wildlife capture. You know, there's very few species that warrant this kind of labour-intensive work and this amount of handling. Most of the animals that are caught and translocated aren't handled at all. They're not touched at all by human hand, which is much better, of course. It's just that the veterinary services insist on these animals having these tests, and that means getting your hands on them.
Yeah. And into them in Charlotte's case.
And into them in Charlotte's case, exactly.
Yeah, up to the elbow.
Perhaps she took a watch off.
It's called doing a rectal. So via the rectum, you're trying to fill the uterus. But most of our training is on standing animal, and on lying down animal it's a bit more difficult. And the problem is I don't do very regularly. I think that one could be pregnant.
Do you want them to be pregnant?
Well, the buyer would want them to be pregnant.
Okay. Well, those four or five shots and they're just closing the gate off. So they're moving on to these next two.
Have these ones had their
wake-ups
yet?
They've had their wake-ups, and they're trying the old tried and tested. Let's see if they're awake by throwing small stones at them. Oh, that one's moving.
See, that one's coming in already.
Slowly but surely.
Yeah. I mean, that's what, less than a minute?
The other four in the far boma are on their feet, looking a bit groggy. 105's thinking of getting up. There you go. Getting up now. Yeah. Just stand off to one side here. I know we're standing behind a wall, but there's no point in annoying it unnecessarily. Charlotte, did that go as smoothly as you would have liked?
Yeah, it was perfect. We've managed to split them, even if it's 4 and 2. Very happy about that, because then you see it was much more relaxing. We've got all them down at the same time. We've managed to do all the injection, all the tests. No problem, they were all breathing right. None tried to stand up, no one were fighting. They all got up in 30 seconds. We're very happy.
One of the things that really impresses me about this, I've never seen this before, is the level of care and attention you're giving to the animals. I mean, welfare is absolutely paramount.
Oh, yeah, especially for these buffalo. You know, they're going to be moved to another province. They could be exposed to different disease. They're going to be sitting in a boma where they've been running, you know, free-ranging on 40,000 hectare farm. They're now in the boma, probably going to be sitting there for 3 to 4 weeks. So you want them to pick up a little bit of condition. The bulls are not in great condition. Pickup condition, so they're ready to move. It's a shock to the system to get used to a new property, new feeding habit, new everything. So you just monitor them and give everything you can do to just help them go through that transition period.
Can I ask you a question about yesterday? There was an escapee, the zebra,
yeah,
got onto the main road, ran 20 kilometers the wrong way. I was talking to Dylan after, and he said a lot of game capture organisations wouldn't have bothered. They would have shot the animal where it, just for safety more than anything else. Your organisation went to a lot of time, a lot of effort and a lot of expense to actually bring that thing back. Why?
That's how we do things. Like you say, we're putting a lot of care into these buffalo. That's the way we do our work. So the only problem we had yesterday is that because that animal had already been darted, we couldn't dart him again. The drugs wouldn't have worked. So we had to find another combination of drug that would put him down without, and especially on an animal that's been running 20 kilometers. We took a lot of risk, but that's part of our job. We, even if, like we say, we don't do it for the value of the animal, but it's still part of our job. Any, if you tell us now that another animal escaped, now we would go now. There's no question of cost when it regards safety of animal. And that zebra would have been on the main road, a truck might have hit it, you know, the consequences. Shooting it, a zebra, a Hartmann zebra, is probably worth 15,000 rand. If you think about it, we flew half an hour. It's 2,000 rand. Yeah. Put a dart in. It's 1,000 rand. The labor, the petrol, the diesel, everything, the help. Maybe the total came to 5,000 rand. It's a 15,000 rand animal. 10,000 rand is enough. We've worked the whole day to get these animals down that mountain, dart them, put them safely on the other side. We don't just put a bullet into them. We try everything. After that, if I see that animal lying on its side in pain this morning, I'll kill him. Any pain, that's a different story. He went off running yesterday afternoon. So far, we're happy. If we fly and if we see him in bad condition and that he's not going to make it, then I'll end the pain. But at least we could have said that we've tried everything.
Swalu's owner, Nicky Oppenheimer, is one of the richest men in Africa. He can afford to run the reserve exactly the way he wants, which is just as well because some of it doesn't make a lot of economic sense.
Swalu is certainly not run to make the maximum amount of money, but it's run to be true to itself. And I may be a businessman, but I also have a great love and feeling for nature. And I couldn't conceive of doing it any other way.
If you wanted to make the maximum amount of money out of that 1,000 square kilometres, how would you go about doing it?
Oh, you would turn it into a hunting reserve. And you would certainly make more money getting rich hunters to come than you do getting people to come and have the experience and drink in the atmosphere. And, you know, the thing is, hunting has a role to play. There's no doubt that hunters are true conservationists because they want to go on hunting. But Swalu, I think, is a place where people need to come and have an experience. They have to... There was some guest of ours who I thought wonderfully said, you know, that they'd been into the Lowveld and seen the Big Five, but they came to Swalu and saw Africa. And that's what I want people to do.
Nicky Oppenheimer. Since I've listened back to these recordings, all sorts of things have been running through my head. Although we're rightly proud of our wildlife in Scotland, we have nothing, nothing in the wild that is worth £10,000, or anyway, not alive. So why should that matter? Well, if an animal has a value, it's perceived as being valuable, which theoretically confers a degree of protection. As Nicky said, the philosophy of Swalu is to try and restore the Kalahari to itself. Herbivores eating grass, predators eating herbivores. Nobody at Swalu talks about vermin. Every living thing is seen as having its place. Now, I really like that idea, but to be honest, to do that in Scotland, to have a properly functional ecosystem, A, we'd need to do it on a grand scale, and B, we'd need to reintroduce all the predators we've wiped out. The common term for that, obviously, is rewilding, and we'll come back to that in future editions of this podcast. If you have any thoughts on any of this, then please email them to me at outofdoors@bbc.co.uk. And just in case you're interested, the music we've been using is authentic. It was recorded amongst the San and Bushman peoples of the Kalahari, and it comes from the John Brearley Collection at the British Library. I recorded tons of stuff at Swalu, so there's going to be a second episode of this podcast midweek. I hope you enjoy it. I'm Mark Stephen, from all of the team here at BBC Aberdeen. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.